we present the News Quiz of the Year, Part 2, and your chairman, Larry Took.
Hello, and a very warm welcome to the second of our two searing investigations into the news of the year. We start at the very hub of world events, at the very centre of Pershore itself.
County council workers will be working to make Pershore High Street safer after Christmas, following continual complaints about the dangers to old folk from town councillors.
And it was E.N. Rouse who spotted that slight Christmas mystique in the pages of the Evesham AdMag. Also recovering from the excesses of Christmas, we are joined by old Father Ingrams of Private Eye and his satirical colleague, Mr. John Wells. Right, over to my left, we have the celebrated artist, Mr. Bill Tidy, and the number two man at punch, David Taylor. And we begin round one with a seasonal piece of news from the Daily Telegraph.
The greeting card firm Fine Art Developments has taken on 30 temporary workers this year. That's 50 more than normal.
No wonder the employment figures have been bad lately. Well, we turn first, coincidentally, to the ex-editor of Private Eye with this question. Who dug a whopping great hole for himself but came up smiling? Get it?
Is it Daily Telegraph? I don't say Daily Telegraph anymore. I say Independent. Because I think it's awfully good. This is a reference to Mr. Murdoch.
It is.
At Wapping, in his horrible, horrible Colditz-style newspaper office.
Rupert Murdoch, who recited his News International business in Wapping in a purpose-built fortress. The walls bristled with guns, barbed wire, man-traps and flamethrowers, just in case anyone tried to get out. We say hello to John Wells once more. John, who left his office unexpectedly early for Hawaii?
I'd assume it referred to a tiny but almost perfectly formed Geoffrey Archer, the erotic novelist. But I didn't know that he had anything to do with Hawaii. I suppose it could be. It could be Papa Doc Marcos, who has probably one of the finest collections of ladies' underwear in the Pacific Basin. And he got what is called the bum's rush, or in where he comes from, it's called the bum's rush.
I wish you'd stopped at President Marcos. You're quite right, it was President Marcos of the Philippines who was ousted in February. The new regime discovered thousands and thousands of pieces of ladies' underwear in the wardrobes of the palace, but it's believed that the president did get away with sufficient pairs of knickers to start up his own underwear business in Hawaii. It'll be called Marcos and Sparkos. Meanwhile, here's Big Bill Tidy with this northern question. Who found a fair cop was on the level, but not on the square?
Ah, it was the great James Fenimore Cooper, hero stalker. Hawkeye stalker. A man who I thought was treated very badly, actually. Who, unfortunately, did not suffer from rising trouser legs. And shook hands normally, and often when he spoke to people, simply said hello, instead of, are the ducks flying high this year?
Is he talking about?
It is Deputy Chief Constable John Stalker, who was suspended from duty after allegations into his professional integrity. It was suggested he'd been associating with known villains, or as they were described by the inquiry, the Greater Manchester Police. Stalker was reinstated when it was proved that his accusers didn't have a trouser leg to stand on. Finally, in this round, we present David Taylor with a little musical number by way of a clue.
Ooh, ooh, what do you do? No one else can dance like you. So, what's all the buzz? There ain't nobody fine like her. Hey, what do you say? Someone took your plans away. So, what's all the buzz? There ain't nobody fine.
Paul McCartney, Spies Like Us, and in light of that, David, you can tell us perhaps about the bashing England have been taking down under.
Oh, yes. Well, it's been a vintage year for spies down in Sydney, where the pantomime season has started a bit early this year. as the British government tries to find its Mr. Right, who is in the process of trying to blow the whistle on what he remembers from his days in MI5, and is waking wild accusations like that Richard Ingram's is the 402nd man.
Apparently, he claims that Roger Waddis was a Russian spy. I did think that was amusing. Anyway, well done, David. Very well answered. It's all about the MI5 trial in Australia and the government's attempt to stop former MI5 man Peter Wright making the laughable assertion that there have ever been any Russian spies in the secret services. Utter nonsense. The current MI5 chief said that the service was as safe as the Dacha, sipping a bowl of borscht equipped Round two now, which we begin with news of an emergency at the Crown Inn in Hornchurch during a recent breakdown of the water supply.
Crown Inn manager Mark Remington explained, "We couldn't serve any Coke or lemonade because we have a special mix system and the toilets were out of action."
Oh, thank heavens for that. Oh. Malcolm Snow of Romford was the lucky survivor, and it was the Record and Advertiser that missed out a comma somewhere along the line. Meanwhile, we move along with Richard Ingram's and another question. Richard, who changed his station in life and ended up last among equals?
Well, this is the chap that John was talking about a minute ago, President Marcos. the chap before that. Chap before. Poor little Archer. Who got caught up in one of his own stories. It was all on the telly. Paradise Postponed. Awfully good, I thought. Very lifelike portrayal of Archer in the main part.
Yes, you're quite right, Richard. It was that famous member of the second oldest profession in the world, Geoffrey Archer. Archer lost his job over a mix-up when he tried to launch the News of the World's new Geoffrey Archer bingo game for railway commuters. And if you're seen carrying a copy of the paper and can answer a simple question, a man in a dirty raincoat comes up to you and gives you 40,000 quid in used fibres. Sounds like a right good game to me, John. Oh, it's you again, John Wells. Who was surprised to see invisible exports going great guns?
Well, was this a reference to Hopalong and the mad Ayatollah?
Yes.
Well, apparently it's a system for exporting what are known as sporting goods via various intermediaries, including the Isle of Wight. And what can one say about these two mad, fuzzy-headed old ex-movie actors running enormous parts of the world?
Was the Ayatollah in films?
Yes, he was actually, he played opposite Barbara Hepworth in...
Pershaw.
They met in where?
Pershaw.
They met in Pershaw.
Not Persia.
Not Persia, no. Pershaw. They met in Pershaw. And there is actually one clip which I think almost everyone would love to see on radio of the Ayatollah actually having intercourse with Miss Hepworth up against a haystack.
It's quite dispatchable.
And here it comes now.
Oh! Well, that brings back a few memories.
I found a needle.
The Ayatollah was actually a tap dancer.
who
very rarely got into the kind of male lead.
Yes, absolutely right. That's all I've got. I've got it all down here. I saw that film about the Ayatollah in Pershaw. Awfully good. Meanwhile, let's see what else the Daily Telegraph has for us this week. Ah, it's a golfing item sent in by Keith Seymour of Wheat Hempstead.
Brand, with a last round of 71, finished a stroke ahead of Bernhard Langer, the West German, whose wife had given birth to a daughter the night before, and Ian Woosnam of Wales.
Who was, of course, the smaller of the two. Another musical puzzler now, and this one's for Bill Tidy.
Down the road I look, and there runs Mary, hair of gold and lips like cherries. It's good to touch the green, green grass of home.
Well, the question is, Bill, who's thinking of staying down under where the grass is greener?
I wish the answer to this was my Gatting, the Henry VIII clone who captains England. I just wanted to bring this in because when they're complaining about him not coming on the pitch the other day because he overslept, I think it's disgraceful. I don't think England captains should go to bed at all.
I didn't think they did.
Well, that brings me round to the big man. It is Botham himself, I.T. Botham, the great it. He was decided to give up this wonderful fog-bound country to go and live in Australia.
Do you spy too? One of these spies?
12th man.
12th man. But, Bill, as you're a Lord's Taverner, you will know perfectly well that it's the Duke of Edinburgh who's the 12th man.
Amazing, isn't it?
Look amazed, everybody. Absolutely right, Bill. The answer is Ian Botham, England's brilliant 30-stone all-rounder, who's announced that he may move to Australia to escape the MCC and the British press. During the season, Botham was suspended after a series of drug allegations led him to describe the England cricket selectors as three gin-soaked purple alligators on bicycles in the sky coming to get me. Oh, baby. Finally, in round two, David Taylor is going to tell us who took a train to Westminster and hitched up to a pilot.
Oh, the great wedding. Yes, Fergie did. So Fergie thrilled us all by having an extraordinarily long train, which was actually on time, thank goodness, and arrived at the church shortly after she did. Or Abbey, as it actually was. And there she met the dashing young helicopter pilot, and they were spliced.
It was the wedding of the year. Church bells rang out, children laughed, pensioners danced in the street. But leaving Bob Geldof aside for a moment, the question was, as you quite rightly said, about Prince Andrew, the Duke of York, who had 10,000 women. No, that can't be right. But it would be extremely unwise to say the grand old Duke of York had 10,000 men, wouldn't it? You can see my dilemma.
Say had 10,
yes, he did marry dear old Fergie, much to everybody's relief. The new Duchess of York has ushered in a fashion for the ample figure, a movement which led directly to Ian Botham being restored to the England cricket team. Well, we've reached the halfway stage, and Viv will now hand me the score, which is Bill and David, a well-earned 9, but Richard and John in the lead by 1, thanks to John's silliness, largely, with 10. Round three now, and some fashion news discovered by Malcolm Wintle of Havant in the pages of the Daily Telegraph.
The biggest news of the year focuses on what's happened to the skirt. Prepare to adjust your eye to a bouncy little boned crinoline, which stops short at mid-thing.
Disgusting. That's the kind of thing we're trying to stamp out at the BBC. Talking of which, Richard, who got his teeth into a 50-year-old in 1986?
Is it Mrs. Whitehouse being attacked again?
No, no.
Mr. Michael Grade?
No,
or Tormentor?
No.
Who is it?
No, it's...
Doris Stokes is writing something on her pad.
Doris Stokes uses the telephone.
She tells me it's Mr. Tebbit.
Right,
who,
right.
Who bit someone, did he? He got his teeth into someone? Tebbit... Did it? He bit Mr. Archer in the leg. He's got a big head as a result.
Yes, Norman Tebbit said that the BBC is biased, staff is politically naive, its judgment is poor, there aren't enough vampire films.
Sorry, unfair to Norman that.
And he said that he, for one, won't be watching daytime television, like everyone else. Now it's music time with John Wells.
Live recording from the House of Commons.
It was the Dagenham Girls Choir. Not at all. Anyway, somebody with their rendition of the Horst Wessel song. The question is, John, whose country thought he was in the right but got a curt rebuff from the rest of the world?
I suppose the pun on the word curt leads us inexorably towards the wispy figure.
of health and good health.
He is very cheery, sort of Austrian fascist to me. And he rose from, I think, a mere male secretary sitting on the lap of Mrs. Adolf Hitler to taking over the United Nations. And the Austrians, who don't mind that kind of thing one bit, in fact, they rather liked it at the time, they just said, you know, two fingers to the rest of the world, and they've, I think he's still there, isn't he?
Yes, Princess Michael's writing a book about him. His autobiography.
I think...
Ein Volk, ein Reich, zwei Autor.
Mm. Ja, und published by Robert Maxwell. Press.
It's a story about Kurt Waldheim, the well-known Nazi impersonator, and transvestite.
Yes, Kurt Waldheim is in the answer. He won the Austrian elections after swearing that he spent the entire war stationed with a catering corps near Reigate. Next, Mrs. G.M. Gotcher and the Worthing Guardian tell us something we all knew to be true, really.
A national survey by Wedding and Home magazine shows that 1 in 10 brides have been unfaithful to their finances.
Bill, another question for you now. Whose record was virgin on silly?
Richard Branson, who owes me 50 quid from about 25 years ago. Do you know that? Are you listening, Richard? I'll have it in black paper bin liners, please.
Well, he may be listening to his wireless as he skims along on Atlantic Challenger. And put his hand in his pocket and probably he'll get it back.
But I wouldn't like to embarrass him in public. Huh.
We can't possibly know at the time we record this whether he will actually be in the New Year's honours list. But most of the dodgy airplane people seem to get in it. And we close this round with a question for David. Who was the subject of Giotto's last known picture?
Giotto? Oh, yes, yes. Well, this was the astronomical event, was it not? When the intensely bright star, Patrick Moore, shot across our screens at an unprecedented lick, and his eyebrows flapping in the solar wind. And was terribly excited because this thing was coming at us for the first time in eons, called Halley's, or some pedants would prefer, Hawley's Comet. Incidentally, it's supposed to bring bad luck, Halley's Comet. Indeed, sure enough, this year, no sooner had it gone, 6 months later, Richard was in court, you see. Yes. I mean, it only goes to show.
It makes you feel quite creepy, doesn't it? The coincidence.
Yes, Doris... Tell me about it.
Well, the only useful piece of information I have is that Halley's Comet, or well, Hawley's Comet, or whatever you'd like to say, takes 76 years to complete the full circuit. Sounds like the M25. At the end of the round, the score is Bill and David 13, but Richard and John have leapt into the lead with 15. Well done. Time now for the final round, and we kick off with an extraordinary offer to bus travellers that appeared in, yes, the Daily Telegraph.
The new National Express Rapide bus service from London to Newcastle includes individual air controls, free video film entertainment, and hostesses on board lavatories.
This could be the final nail in British Rail's coffin. Mr. and Mrs. D. Burridge of Reading and others spotted the quote, and we move on rather rapidly to something even more distasteful for Richard Ingrams.
How sad the world would be if there were no Santa Claus. It would be as sad as if there were no little girls. There would be no childlike faith, no poetry, no beauty to make bearable this existence. We should have no enjoyment except in what we feel and see.
Yeah. Well, that was, yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus. Or, as it might aptly be retitled...
What a load of old rubbish.
And the question is, Richard, can you name the DJ who made it to DJ? And if you need any more clues, just put one finger in your mouth when you answer. Yeah.
I never mastered the art of the Sidiobo impersonation, I'm sure. John could do a very good one.
Well, you told all you to do that, and it'll work out all of that. All you have to do to come with that, you're allowed to go away.
Personally, I prefer Arthur Mullard. Yeah. I always read his column in the Daily Telegraph.
Sidiobo, yes. He was this terrible man was launched by the BBC on Radio 2 as a replacement for Sir Terence Wogan.
Yes. Yes, you got it right. The newfound star of Radio 2, Derek Jameson. The man who thinks that libel is what you stick on a suitcase. And John Wells, finally, who got into a lot of bother with their hovers?
I see. You're not suggesting a hovercraft, but more of a hovering chopper.
Yeah.
Captain Bob?
Yeah.
Are you telling me that Mr. Maxwell has a hovering chopper?
He does. He does have a chopper.
How interesting. Well, I've never seen Mr. Maxwell's hovering chopper. Well, I presume...
aren't they silly, really, honestly? You think two grown men... I mean, between them, they're 186 years old.
I hope this isn't bad taste reference to Captain Bob's chopper.
No. It is no such
no,
thing.
No, no, no. When he says hover, he's referring to hovering choppers, and in this case, it was Mr. Heseltine's hovering chopper.
Oh, I...
Because...
I don't think you've improved it by changing the name of the person.
Well, there was a bit of a dust-up, because that little chap with the funny hair called Leon Britann... and Tarzan.
I think Tibbet's right.
And Tarzan Heseltine had a bit of trouble over there with their choppers. And it was. I never understood what it was because I'd never seen a Westland helicopter. And but apparently there was a lot of. It was. It made the newspaper. You must have seen it, Barry. I don't know why. Why you ask these questions? It was in all the newspapers at the time, and what happened, I don't know. I mean, does anybody know, is it now an American firm?
The company was finally sold to the Americans and disappeared from the news. In fact, it's turned up in Nicaragua, and it seems that the Contras got it on the cheap from the Ayatollah. Bill Tidy takes a final bow now with this puzzler. Bill, what was the plain solution to a terminal problem?
I think we should get extra points for being sensible, actually, David and I.
Absolutely.
I think we've sat here and listened to this tirade of obscenity for nearly 4 weeks now. Do we get a point for simply being nice?
Yes, I'll give you a point for being nice.
Right, I'm going to say bum. No, that was childish. I take it back. We're talking about the special treasure trove that the airways have laid down. It's a mystery terminal, which has a mystery number, 4, but you can't find it. And it's specially put there to make travel ever so slightly impossible. I think it's difficult to get to, apparently. It can't be approached on foot. I think it can. You can get to it by air.
Yes, you fly from Terminal 1. It takes about half an hour.
But by the time you do get there, I think it's become Terminal 7.
And you're quite right. With the problem was overcrowding at Heathrow, the solution was the brand new, expertly designed Terminal 4 building. British Airways recommend tying a thread to the main door so that you can find your way out again, or alternatively, just practice for a few weeks on the Barbican. There have been reports of a strange creature, half man, half beast, stalking the labyrinth, picking off unwary travellers. But in fact, it turned out to be Derek Jameson doing an outside broadcast. Finally, last of all, a question for David Taylor. David, whose slanted opinions made it difficult for him to see eye to eye with his hosts?
Oh, this was the Prince Philippine. It was during the Oriental visit of the royal family when... Sotto voce, the prince was heard to remark to some visiting students about the angle of his host's
eyes.
Very good. Excellent. Yes, all about Prince Philip, who went to China, made a few unguarded remarks about his host's slitty eyes, and ended up, as the Sun put it, making a right pyrrhic of himself. No sooner had he come back than he was at it again, complaining about their eating habits. That's the trouble with insulting the Chinese. 10 minutes later, you want to insult them again. Well, that excellent answer by David Taylor brings the news quiz of the year to a close for 1986. Before we go, I'm sure Richard Ingrams would like to regale us once more with a news item, possibly from the pages of The Independent.
No, regrettably not The Independent. It's from The Observer, from an advertisement for a garment which has been made in Korea. And it says, please note, the word fireproof on the label has been wrongly printed and should read, warning, keep away from fire.
Well, thank you for injecting a nice seasonal note into it there, Richard. John, what have you got?
I don't know if you'll like this one. This is just a whimsical one, which I found in the copies of the Daily Telegraph.
Independent.
In the copy of the Times. It's white, this one. So it's probably the Times.
I'll read it out, yeah.
And, all right. There it goes. It's a lot of walks you can go on, and this one seems rather conspiratorial, because it says, 11:15, Westminster, Guy Fawkes anniversary, meet Westminster Underground. Rather droll.
Bill Tidy, what have you got for us?
Two to do with liquid, actually. A typhoid warning in the Sunday Telegraph. People living in the Malvern Hills have been warned not to bottle their own water. And a letter from 8th Haven, Richmond, Surrey. Hampton residents woke up on Tuesday to flooding and traffic chaos when a waiter burst in the early hours of the morning.
Well done. David, what have you got for us?
This is from the Derby Evening Telegraph, which says, in spite of her success, Julia still thinks there aren't enough TV opportunities for actresses. Men write the script, she said. All the best parts go to men. Women only get the supporting roles. She got her own equity card by playing a pantomime tree.
Well, that brings us to the end of the contest. I can tell you that in spite of Bill and David really battling hard and getting a very, very well-earned 18... the news brain top-of-the-form mastermind for 1986, Richard Ingrams and John Wells with 19. Well done. We'll be back with a new series of the news quiz on January the 24th, so don't forget to tune in for that. Wishing you a happy new year, we leave you with proof sent to us by Andrew Douglas that not all those newspaper errors are accidental.
The Cornish Guardian have sacked two printers after they set the name of Mr. Albert Riddle, Secretary of the Royal Cornwall Show, as Jimmy Riddle. Investigations revealed further alterations in which a man rolling a side of lamb was described as rolling a marijuana joint, archery became lechery, and a pasty competition became a potty competition. In defence, the printers explained that the Cornish Guardian was a very tedious newspaper. And furthermore, that Mr. Riddle had not been unduly upset, as he'd been known universally as Jimmy Riddle since his Navy days.
For that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz of the year were Richard Ingrams, David Taylor, Bill Tidy and John Wells. The chairman was Barry Took, and the news was read by me, Brian Martin. The programme was written and compiled by John Langdon, with the producer, Harry Thompson.